Hi, this is Joe Patty. Thanks for listening to WRTI Online. This service is made possible through the support of WRTI's members. You can become a member, too. Since you're already online, just visit www.wrti.org and click the Become a Member link on the upper left corner of the webpage. You can also join us by phone at 1-866-809-9784. Your membership will help keep WRTI's broadcast and online services strong. And again, thank you. Now, on with the show.
Our resident balladeer is here at Crossover. And welcome back, John DiChiaro. It's been wonderful to...
Jill, it's so good to see you again.
To see you again. Yes. It's Giovanni DiChiaro. Mm-hmm. Is, of course, an old friend and a very prolific, I guess, arranger, composer, guitarist. Of course, guitarist first. John, you have done many, many transcriptions, and this new album that you have out has some new additions to the repertoire, isn't that right?
Oh yeah, one of the main reasons why I did this whole album is because of the first track on the disc. The way it came about, Jill, is this: for the past 24 years now, I've been teaching at a thing in Mississippi called the Mississippi Governor School. It's a 3-week program for gifted high school kids, and there's one of the people I work with. Her name is Elizabeth. And she told me that, you know, every day when she goes to work, she always puts this piece on in the car, and she said it gets her going, and she just loves this piece. And she said, I wonder if a guitar quartet could play that. So she told me the name of the piece, and I didn't know it all that well. I mean, I heard it. It's very, very well known, but it's like everything else. You know, you hear motives, you hear little things, you don't recognize them. So she showed me the music, and it was like 31 pages of just nothing but black notes, little Ozaiah passages all over the place. So I said to her, you know, Elizabeth, you're right. Only a guitar quartet could play that, and just dismissed it, you know. So she came back at me again with that, and I said, well, you know. So then she says to me, you know, I bet I could get one of your former students to transcribe that for guitar. I said, well, you go right ahead, you know. And then this made me think, now, why is she going to call that guy, you know? So then she did the worst probably thing you could do with me. She said to me, John, she says, I dare you to do this. So what was I going to do?
Those were the magic words.
What was I going to do? So that was in June. So by the time I finished summer school at the time, I had some time in between the break. I started transcribing that in early September, and 5 months later I finished. And I've never transcribed anything that was more difficult than
that. And of course, for our audience, what he's talking about is the Liszt Hungarian Rhapsody number 2, which is a handful, even if you're playing it on the piano or with a full orchestra. It's really an extremely complex thing to transcribe for the guitar.
And you know, Jill, the hardest thing about that was this. You know, a lot of times in piano music, they'll have the melody indicated some way, usually with stem direction, or usually they'll put accent marks in there.
Right.
Somewhere where you know. In this piece, you know, there the melody was inside an inner voice.
Well, it's really a brilliant work.
Oh, it is. I mean, it's an amazing piece. But to find the melody, just to find it, it took me forever.
And, of course, it's a very, very popular work, and a lot of people who will hear it will recognize it from the Bugs Bunny cartoon.
You know, it's funny you should mention that. This, honest to God, this is a true story. She invited me over to her house for dinner one Saturday afternoon, so I went, and she had her niece there, or some younger person, and she had cartoons on. And do you know, it was Tom and Jerry. It was Tom and Jerry.
Really?
And what came on was the Rhapsody. I couldn't believe
it. Well, of course, it's unbelievable. And people kind of smirk, you know, when they hear. But it is a wonderful work. And the arrangement that you have done, the transcription, really, for guitar, was a Herculean task.
Oh, it was. I mean, it took me, and then it took me about a year to learn how to play it. Because there are so many things that guitar players just don't like doing. Like, for example, in one section, you have scales that are going in opposite directions.
Oh, my goodness.
You know, you have things going back and forth like that. You have this melody over here, which is a simple melody, but... And it's very difficult to get around because I could have taken it an octave lower, but it would have lost the brilliance.
The brilliance,
you know?
Of it, yes.
Then just before that, there was this passage where you're going... and he has you doing it. And so I finally decided, I said, he's trying to imitate a guitar. Yes. And so what I did was,
what is now, that's the flamenco. What is that called?
That's called rasguardo.
Rasguardo.
And I'm telling you, I looked at that piece. And obviously, they didn't have it marked as rasguardo.
Of course not.
So I looked at it, and I got it up to tempo, and I looked at it, and I said, he's trying to do this. You know, that's all it is. And so I decided, well, I'm going to do that.
But it's interesting that when you're transcribing music, and this goes for any instrument, you really discover what the composer was trying to do in many, many cases.
Right.
And one of the most difficult things with transcription, which is for our audience, when you take a piece of music that was written for one particular vehicle, whatever it may be, and make it believable on another instrument group of instruments.
I
think the hardest thing about that is to get the essence of the music and the piece and what the composer is trying to say.
Right.
And of course, the guitar is a limited instrument in a certain way. And this, of course, is for piano. Well, I think he wrote it originally for piano, and then he also did an orchestral version of it.
Mm-hmm.
So of course, with the orchestra, you have all kinds of coloration that you can do, which, and then there are many hands doing it.
Right.
But for the guitar, you're the solo.
The hardest thing with this, do you know what key it was in? It was in like C sharp, I think it was 7/6 sharps. You know, I looked at that, never. But you know what was interesting? It is very guitaristic in one way, Jill. If you look at the score, in slow motion, here's what it sounds like. Hear that low D? I have the E string tuned down a whole step. And that is very guitaristic, except in the keyboard score, that low D is 2 octaves higher.
Oh,
it's also a C sharp, you know, and it's in octaves. So what I had to do was, we can't, you know, it would be impossible to do that, which is what was written. I just put it down. And what you just said makes sense, because now it fits the guitar. It sounds as though it's a guitar piece. Watch.
Yes. Sure. Like a pedal.
Sure, you see that? Uh-huh. The other thing that was difficult about this piece was his use of minor seconds. Watch, let me show you. Which on a guitar, by the way, are impossible. They're very close, but they're very far away. It involves like a 6 or 7 frets shift like that to get those guys.
It's a half step.
For a half step. Uh-huh. And it's going so fast. Watch.
Oh my goodness.
That kind of stuff, you know. And oh my gosh, you know, and you have to, when you're playing this piece, you have to concentrate that you're playing at the right tempo. You have to
be thinking ahead. Of course, because there are varying, very varying tempos.
Oh my gosh. You have to make sure you don't rush, because the parts that are easy technically, you want to rush through them, you know. And then you pay the price when you come to those chromatic.
Oh, yes.
I mean, that kind of stuff. And if you let it go out of control, You're lost.
Did you get discouraged at any point and say, this is impossible?
No. You know, see, I'm the kind of person, when something looks hard, it makes me mad.
Good. Well, you know, it's interesting. I remember that I would kind of yell at myself if I got so nervous about playing something, and I would get angry with myself and say, wait a minute. That's an interesting impetus that it gives you.
Well, you know, I remember a long, long time ago when I was in graduate school, Emmanuel Ax came to my class, and he said something I've never forgotten, and it was, he was talking about how he concentrates when he plays. And he said he used to pick places in the music, little gas station stops, where he would just mentally just take a break, and he would put them in, and he would know, okay, break, so he'd come to the end of a phrase, and then jump into the next one. And he would usually put it right before a difficult passage, because that's when people rush. When they know something difficult is coming, they get anxious. Mm-hmm. So they jump into it. And I do that too. And so I've learned that I in all my pieces, I always find my little gas stations.
But it's true. I think any instrumentalist will find that they have these tricks that they use.
Right. And whatever works, right.
John, you have had a rather checkered career, in the sense that you kind of started out, you're from the area, or you're from New York?
I am from New York City, that's right.
And where did you study?
I studied at Kane University in New Jersey, and then I went and got my master's degree at NYU. I forgot to tell you this, but I got a call 2 weeks ago telling me that Kane University named me the Alumni of the Year of 2008.
And oh, I'm coming up in April it's university. I remember when that started. It was Kane College.
That's right.
Oh, bravo and congratulations.
They just did that.
So, isn't that wonderful?
And so I can't wait to go back. I've been back several times to play concerts over there, but this, and I told them, it just came out of nowhere. I just didn't expect that.
Well, that's really gratifying, and you deserve it. So you got your master's at NYU. Mm-hmm. In guitar, is that it, or
right.
performance?
Performance, huh? Guitar performance.
And then you told me at one point that you were either offered a position or you created a position at, was it Hattiesburg?
Hattiesburg, Mississippi.
Did they have, they had no guitar department?
No, they didn't. What happened was they offered me a position, but they offered me a position that I could create. You were right both ways.
Okay. So right. You had one student, right?
I started with one student who was a non-major, and my job was to develop the program. We had a president who was very forward-thinking, a wonderful Dr. Aubrey Lucas, a prince of a man. Very intelligent. He himself was a musician. I taught his kids. And I basically got down there. First thing I did was I tried to go and play all over the place so I could get known to the local community.
And, of course, they probably were not used to a classical guitar because that's what you play.
No, not at all. If I told them I was going to come play classical guitar, they'd probably say, well, we'll call you back later.
Right.
But I would just say, I'm going to come play guitar.
So they were in the rock and roll?
Oh, yeah. Mood. And Jill, what I would do is I'd take some rock and roll tune that I knew everybody knew, or Amazing Grace, because I was in the Deep South, and I would just play that. And then all of a sudden, you know how it is. People respond to what they know. And then the trick is then introduce them to something they don't know. Do you know what I mean? So then I'd play the Bach or I'd play whatever. And then I did a lot of transcriptions of well-known pieces. Then I went to the state capitol and I met with the junior college board and I convinced them to start offering guitar in the junior colleges because there's 15 of them because I needed a feeder system. I needed to feed
myself. To create
myself.
Students.
Yeah, exactly. So they approved it. And I remember I played this piece by Tárrega, this Recuerdos de la Alhambra. The tremolo piece, you know?
Yes, that's the one.
And I played it for them. And I said, if you have a guitar program here, we'll be able to have kids playing just like that.
And it happened. It happened.
Yeah, they do.
Well, I think the upshot is you started with one, and now they have a master's program.
Oh, my God, they have
guitar.
A doctorate program there.
Doctoral
And I started four scholarships right now. One of them is in my name there.
Oh, isn't that amazing?
And in 9 of the 15 community colleges, they have guitar teachers and guitar programs, all of whom are – and most of them, with the exception of one junior college, are my former students.
Now, what I want to ask you is this. Initially, when you were studying guitar, you wanted to be a soloist, right?
Right.
That was
right.
your dream. Mm-hmm. I'm sure you never thought that you would wind up being a pedagogue. I mean, someone who
never.
Really created a place to learn, a program to expand, and, of course, to spread the word, which is mm-hmm. what is not happening now.
Well, you know what it is, Jill? I think as a musician, you're a harpist. I think if you're going to be a successful musician, and advice to younger people, don't be closed-minded. You know, try to work in every area. Try to expand in every area. Because, you know, as a musician, you have to make a living, so teach. You try to do performances, and then you try to focus on one thing in your performance that you can become known for.
Mm-hmm.
Like, some guys are known for the way they play Bach. Some guys do Scarlatti. Mm-hmm. My thing was I did the Joplin, you know? And then, you know, trying to get the guitar programs going. You know, so you have to kind of like
versatility.
Versatility. You just
it's really for making a living. Of course, what happens is as a musician, you begin to become a much more profound person because your understanding expands as you expand.
Right, exactly.
Isn't that true?
Oh, that's very true.
Yes.
I tell you one more thing. I learn from everybody. You know, everybody I meet. I feel sometimes I'm learning more than they are. I've learned more from this experience working with this student or with this group or in this situation, you know, and all those. I can remember, Jill, when I was in college, I thought, now why am I learning solfege? I'm never going to do that.
Mm-hmm.
And now I use that every day. In fact, on the way up here on a plane, I was writing something I didn't have any staff paper, so I wrote out the rhythms, and I wrote out this little thing I'm writing in solfège.
And of course, for our audience, solfège is it's like sight singing,
right.
Isn't it? And yes, ear training. Interval training,
exactly.
And so on.
It's kind of like applying syllables to pitches so that you can...
Well, do, re, mi, fa,
do,
so.
Re, mi, say, that's
but that. This is something that is taught in the conservatories in Europe, always was.
Right.
I don't think that we did that so much here. Now, of course, I think they are teaching
it.
Yeah,
we need to do it.
But it's
sure.
very, very important. It's vital for anybody who is a musician.
Oh, yeah. If you can't, and you know, another thing I've noticed this, and something I've learned over the years, you know, if you're a musician, you have to be able to sing, regardless of your voice. You have to be able to sing, because when you're playing, you're singing. And I remember I studied with a violinist for 3 years in New York. And Leonid Bolotin was his name. And he didn't really know that much about guitar, but he was an incredible musician. And violinists think literally.
Laterally.
This way. That's the word.
Horizontally.
Horizontally, right. Yeah. Guitarists think vertically.
Because it's chordal.
Yeah, right. Yeah. And so, but on top of each of those chords is a melody note.
Exactly.
And I can remember sometimes he was an older man, and I was sitting, I'd have a lesson at 5 o'clock in the day, and by the time I got there, his cigar would be about that long, maybe an inch long, left it, you know? And he'd sit, and I swear to you, Joe, he was asleep in his chair. I swear he was sleeping in that chair.
Must have been.
And then I would play a wrong note, and boom, he would jump up, the cigar would fall out of his mouth. He'd go, no, sonny boy, no.
Isn't that? It's so interesting, and of course, you really do appreciate, as you go, as anybody, if you keep learning, and you do keep learning,
right.
And as you teach, you learn. Mm-hmm. And I think you also probably never expected to be doing so much in the publishing end of things, because your transcriptions have been published and are used all over.
Right. Well, that was one of the things too. You know, I felt like, well, I've done all this work. You know, I might as well get my money's worth out of it.
Again, eternal problem.
That's right. So, you know, so I just contacted Bill Bay over at Mel Bay, and he liked the idea. Like for this CD, this my new CD here, when I got the idea and I finished working on the Rhapsody, I thought to myself, you know, Johnny, you just spent 6 months. 5 months on this piece, and now you've got it all written out. I'm going to call him. And I told him, hey, Bill, guess what? You know, I'm recording the Rhapsody of Liszt. He goes, you're doing what?
Yes.
I said, yeah. He says, would you be interested in publishing all of these scores? And I said, the music on this CD are all well-known piano pieces that everybody knows that we do on guitar. And, of course, there weren't any arrangements of these for guitar at all, because I looked. And so he said yes. And I just feel that if you're going to, you know, and not only that, but you're expanding the repertoire for other people.
Well, of course, and it's wonderful that you can do that. Now, you're also in a new position now. You actually retired.
I did.
And you're working harder than ever, right?
Jill, I'm telling you something. I retired 2 years ago. I am busier now than I've ever been. I'm living in Louisiana, Pineville, Louisiana, and I'm teaching at Louisiana State University at Alexandria. And
you're doing the same thing again.
I'm doing the same. Well, here's the situation. I mean, when I went there, there was no music. They had one guy teaching a music appreciation class, and that's
And this is a university.
This is a university, yeah. And so I went over there and talked to the chair, who was an awfully nice man, very nice, very bright, brilliant man, right? And I talked to him about maybe doing some guitar, which he said, okay. And now I'm teaching a music appreciation class there, and I'm also teaching a music reading class. And there's talk of developing the program so that they can eventually offer a major in music education. But that means classes in music theory, music history, all of the instruments, you know, that kind of all the education. Now, obviously, we'll need a lot of people to come in there, but, like, there I am. So what I've done is, you know, I've recruited people to. I feel so awful, but I've gone out there. Come on, take my class. You know, I'm a choir director down there.
Well, of course, yes. Now this is the other aspect. Right. You have a choir now. Is that
That's right? Well, Jill, when I was at USM in Hattiesburg, I was always playing guitar at mass. Well, one time at this one church, the choir director quit, and the priest asked me if I knew anybody that would do the choir, and I thought, well.
Hard can it be?
How hard can it be? Exactly right. You know. Well, I was about to find out, but you have to put your heart into it to do a good job of that. So I started doing that, and I fell in love with that. You know. Mm. So my last couple, I would say the last, I started that in 1997, and I left Hattiesburg in 2005. So was it 8 years? I did on every Sunday. I go off and do three masses down in a couple of different Catholic churches. Then when I retired, I moved here, and I am doing a church job in Louisiana. I'm a choir director. But in the course of things, we were getting ready right after Katrina. And Katrina was really the
impetus.
That's the word.
Well, you're not that far from New Orleans.
No, in fact, Katrina. The eye went right over my house.
Oh my!
Well, what happened was all the people on the coast were devastated. But I went to Father Patty. I said, "Look, we need to become focused on something other than all this misery. Mm-hmm. Let's go ahead and let's do a Christmas concert." Even though people were living in those FEMA trailers, they were living in with their family members, they were living in homes that were almost destroyed, they came to practice every Wednesday.
Isn't that amazing?
It was amazing.
So it brought them together their minds off of this tragedy.
It did. I mean, it was the impetus for this choir. Well, after that, we got together and we did a Christmas concert, and then they wanted to get together, to stay together, to do more concerts. Well, one thing led to another. I put the choir together there. Then I moved to Louisiana. Then the idea of why don't we become a performing choir going all over the place came up. And I thought, what a great idea. So I found a tour company in Boston, Encore Tours, and they put a package together for us. So,
and you're going to be going to Europe this summer.
In October. And what happened was, so I have like a 60-voice choir in Mississippi. And then I figured, well, let's do one here. So in Louisiana, I started one. So Monday night, I rehearsed the choir there. Thursday night, I rehearsed the choir in Louisiana.
But do you realize what you've done? I mean, above and beyond creating music and getting a focus for these people, this is really, it's a mission of mercy, in a sense.
Well,
which was not the idea at all.
No, it wasn't. Well, what it is, first of all, I'm having so much fun with it. Because I really am enjoying it. I got to say, since I retired, I'm having a ball.
Yeah, and you're working hard.
Oh, my God, yeah. But I'm enjoying it. I have this LSU job. I've got this church job where I'm a choir. I do five masses on the weekend. And then I do these two choirs. I have choir practice. But, Jill, I'm having a ball. I'm telling you. I don't look at it as the hardest thing I do is prepare the music, because a lot of times I've got to
And these are people that don't read music.
Yeah, that's another thing. But that's what makes it beautiful, Jill, is that if you believe people can do it, they can do it. If I got there and said, well, they can't do it, they can't, they wouldn't. But I always tell them, sure, we can do this. And the way we rehearse it is, and I've become somewhat of a singer. I have a terrible voice, but I can at least sight read a part. And usually I can't sing out of my range, but they've become very patient with me as I squeak like a duck. But at least they can hear the melody. And I've learned that people respond better to hearing a melody sung by a voice than having it played on a keyboard. And then they remember, and then we practice and practice. And Jill, we've put together 15 pieces for this concert that we're
doing. So you're going to be going to Italy?
We have a trip. We're going to be going to Rome. We're going in October, and we start out in Rome. We're going to Florence, Vicenza, then we're going to Assisi, then we're going to come back, and we have a little performance for Pope Benedict. At his wedding. Isn't that awful? Isn't that amazing?
Well, it's amazing.
Then that afternoon, we'll be playing for a mass. I have to tell you this story, because everybody who listens to this will appreciate this. The guy that's running the tour told me that you are not allowed to do Vivaldi.
Why?
I said, what? He said, you are not allowed to do Vivaldi. The Pope does not allow Vivaldi in any of the churches in his diocese. And I asked him why. And he goes, I don't know. There's some issue with Vivaldi. Well, I got out my history book.
Well, he was called the Red Priest.
Well, I got out my book. It turned out he was a Catholic priest who had a French girlfriend. And he was working at a girls' school.
Yes, there were Pietà. Well, that was the Ospedale di Pietà or something. It was an orphanage, yes.
And so he was a rebel priest. And this pope.
Really?
Yeah. This pope is very conservative that way, and he will not allow any Vivaldi.
That is one of the most incredible things.
So what I had to do, this is how it got. I mean, I actually had to Xerox the first three pages of every piece we're doing so it could be approved by the Vatican.
Of course.
So we could do it in there. So naturally, I picked, all the settings of the Psalms, all the settings of scripture passages. can't go wrong with those.
No.
But Vivaldi is persona non grata.
Isn't that
amazing?
That is.
And what was that? 16 in the Baroque period, right?
I wonder how many calls we're going to get on this
But it's absolutely amazing. We cannot do Vivaldi.
I don't even have an answer for that.
I was like you. What? Yeah,
I guess the beauty of music and the greatness of music should rise above certain things, right?
Well, you know, you'd think after all those years.
You know, in the old days, I mean, the early days, the church was very stringent about,
right.
I mean, they governed the way, the keys that you would use to write.
Gosh,
I mean, it
yes.
was very so. Oh. So this is not really surprising in a sense. So it's a kind of a conservative approach.
It is, but you would think, you know, that was how many years ago was it?
Hundreds and hundreds. Yes. Well, in any case, the fact that you're going to bring your choir to the Pope is really excited, and it's really wonderful, John. And I want to say for anyone who is interested, John has the new album out. It's on the Centaur label. It's called Melody d'Amore, and you have. Some romantic things on here, and of course we are listening to you here live in our studio. So now you're going to play for us it's a very popular work.
Right. This is the Tango by Albéniz, and I have to say to you, when I saw it in the book, I didn't quite recognize it, but then as soon as I started playing, I thought, oh my God, this is absolutely gorgeous.
Well,
music.
Of course he was, but he wrote for guitar, didn't he?
He never wrote for guitar, but if you ask any guitar player, and pianists are going to kill me when I say this, but if you listen to some of the transcriptions of guitar music, you'd swear that Albéniz had guitar in mind, but he didn't know any play.
Because you always think of Spanish music, and of course you think of classical guitar.
And you know, and you listen to this melody. How romantic can you be?
Oh, yes.
I mean, this just reeks. Come on over here, baby. I mean, it just reeks of that, doesn't it?
I have to tell the audience, it's a joy to watch John play because he loves it. He loves what he's doing, and
oh,
you can see it, and you really radiate that. And always a joy to speak with you, John, and looking forward to, I guess, another album and more exciting stories and hopefully some live concerts in the area.
I hope so. Okay, here's the album.
And thank you so much for coming. Here now, the Tango by Isaac Albéniz.